Welcome into the Thunder basketball universe. We are in the playoffs. They are in full swing. The Thunder up 2-0 in their series against the New Orleans Pelicans. That means they wrapped up their first two games here inside of Paycom Center. So we've got a lot to break down because there was so much in these games, whether it was the atmosphere, the games themselves, guys stepping up big time. I mean, we have so much to uncover. Personally, for me, this is my first playoff inside of Paycom Center. Baby's first playoff.
Yeah. I would say maybe your first real playoff.
First real playoff experience. I was with the organization when the Thunder went to the bubble, game seven against the Houston Rockets. That was awesome then. But
it was a lot quieter.
Very, very quiet. And I don't think my ears will ever recover from Loud City their thing.
What are your feelings having this opportunity to experience this for the first time?
Nick, I couldn't stop smiling. Yeah. I was over there in my little perch on the side of the court, and I was just looking around, and every time, you know, J-Dub would make a dunk, the crowd would just erupt in a roar, and then J-Dub would get like a steal, and the crowd would start barking, and it's just, everything about it was just incredible. And I am blown away by these Thunder fans.
I love the 15 minutes before tip-off.
Yeah.
And just feeling like, all right, we've got all our battle gear on.
Yeah.
But it's like a happy war. It's like everybody's like really excited and focused, and everybody's there. I mean, there's not a seat that is empty from about 15 minutes to tip-off through the end of the game. And it's just, it's a thrill to go into those games, to be able to, you know, go be courtside like you and I get a chance to be. And there's nothing like it. I'm excited for you to see a road crowd for the Thunder too, to get a little bit of a comparison of maybe how OKC is not normal.
I recognize that having gone to every away arena before the playoffs, obviously, but there was just some extra sauce in the air in Oklahoma City. It was a little something special. So we have a lot of things that have made us look over these last couple of games. Nick, I'll let you go first. What made you look in these first two games?
I would say the poise and composure from a team that 7 out of the 11 guys that played in game one, that was their very first playoff game. And even a guy like Isaiah Joe, you know, he had played in playoff games before, but never more than 3 minutes.
Right.
So you have basically the vast majority of the guys on the floor for you who had played in, you know, no playoff games before or really didn't play much of a role. Two of those other guys were Shea and Lu Dort, and they, you know, only have a handful of, you know, maybe 15, 20 games total combined of playoff experience. So it's really amazing the way that this team was able to handle their business in game one. We're going to break down what happened in each of these two games, but handle their business in game one in terms of getting the job done in crunch time when you didn't have a perfect game. And then rolling out almost as perfect of a playoff game that you can in game two. All points in that game two were scored by players 25 or younger for the Thunder, and that has never happened before.
The first time in NBA history, period. No caveats. That is just the first time that's ever happened, which is really cool and goes to show just when we talk about every time we're in a press conference and we're talking to these guys about, oh, you know, being a young team and first time doing this, every response is, we want to be an uncommon group. We want to have uncommon maturity, uncommon poise. And in order to reach our goals, you have to be an uncommon team. And the Thunder showing that in these first two games.
What made you look, Paris?
Barking. there was so much barking. Lots and lots
and
of barking.
And not at the officials. Not at the other team.
It was just the most wholesome barking. Yeah. And the best part about it is that it came out of nowhere. No one told the crowd to start barking.
Totally organic.
Totally organic. And it first caught my eye when the starting lineups are announced. Everyone always chants Lou when like Lou runs through the tunnel. But then J-Dub starts running through and it sounds like, what is that noise?
Why are they still saying Lou?
Like, no, those are barks. People are barking at this man right now. And it's like no one told them to do that. And then in the first game, you remember, J-Dub got that rebound against Jonas Valanciunas, tied him up and let go. That was just such an awesome energy, effort, gritty play. And then he just starts barking at the crowd. The crowd starts barking back. And my favorite video to come out of the night, I think it was from the TNT broadcast, was just like this older couple just like barking in the crowd. And And I'm like, that is playoff basketball in Oklahoma City. You love to see it. And it makes my heart so happy.
Our at OKC Thunder digital team was able to capture this moment as the players walked off the floor after game two. And they're barking to the crowd. The crowd's barking to them. And, you know, it's just, it was a perfect send-off to this home portion of this first round series to recognize, like, this was a true home court advantage and a truly organic relationship between the players and the fans, not manufactured at all. And that's what makes it all the more powerful.
So fun. Yeah. And I imagine, you know, New Orleans isn't that far away. We might have some dogs to travel to New Orleans.
I would not be surprised to hear some barking.
That's
down
what
there.
I'm expecting. Yeah. That's what I'm expecting.
Barking on bourbon.
Nick, I heard you have a little extra made you look today.
I've got one more.
A bonus made you look.
So our friend of the Thunder organization, Nane Yamano, who you may know, 7A on social media, she does these, you know, the amazing cartoon sketches of Thunder players and the team after games. And she's always got one like immediately afterwards. Well, she flew into town for games one and two. She had all sorts of meet and greets. The lines to see her at the park here at Scissortail Park were like around the corner, just unbelievable. But before game two, she got to go courtside and, you know, she's just in awe of everything. She's been to OKC before, but not in a situation like this. You know, her relationship with the team and the organization has developed. She's standing courtside. You know, I was like, hey, let's take a quick picture. And before we could even do that, Aaron Wiggins comes up to her and says, I love you. And this is like a middle-aged woman who's like
the
in from Japan.
Sweetest ever.
Woman. And she's the best. And so humble that she just can't believe that people are recognizing her, let alone Thunder players are recognizing her. Aaron Wiggins comes up to her and, you know, professes his love for her artwork. Jay Will comes up with this beaming smile and gives her a big hug. So anyway, it was such an amazing display of like what playoff basketball, what having basketball in Oklahoma City does. This is truly an international sport. We have connections all over the globe, and to be able to unite a kid from Greensboro, North Carolina, and this woman, Nane, from Japan is just, you know, crazy to me.
This is my first time meeting Nane.
Yeah.
And she is so sweet, so wholesome. And I had to ask her because she like cranks out these doodles super quickly after games. Like you and I will be in the press conference room and be like, this is so good. She's already done. And they're so like, they're great. They're on point. She chooses the perfect moments every single time. And I'm like, how do you do these so fast? And she was like, my technique isn't very sophisticated.
I mean, again, so humble, so self-deprecating, and yet a genius.
A genius, you know? And it's perfect. And like now I want all of the doodles, and I just want to frame them in my house. And I want to see that picture of Nene and Aaron Wiggins, because I know that was such a wholesome moment.
It's so good. I know that Brooke from our social team has it.
Okay.
So we'll have to try to get it to our guy, Matt Bishop.
Make sure you guys can see it.
Embed this in the pod. Yeah.
We'll make sure you guys can see it, too. Just to make you smile moment. All right. We got to talk about these wins here inside of Paycom Center, because two vastly different games in terms of the tone that they took, in terms of the outcome of these games. But there were a couple of big through lines. The first game, there were 20 lead changes, 13 ties. The Thunder only won by a bucket. The game went down to the wire. I mean, truly just a back and forth battle, grind it out, defensive battle. The Thunder walk away with a really gutsy game one victory. Game two, very different. Buckets were not hard to come by for the Thunder in that game. They put up, let me make sure I get the numbers right, 124 points in this game, while also maintaining that defensive integrity, holding New Orleans to 92 points.
Again.
Again, the exact same total that they held them to in game one. Just really gutsy, business-like approach in game two specifically after such a hard-fought win in game one.
There's just a level of comfort and confidence that you could see from this team in game two. They did not play perfect even on the final possession of game one and felt like they had to approach game two as if that shot by CJ McCollum at the buzzer went in and not rattle out. So I think that was the key to game two, is the Thunder had a humble approach to coming off of a win, and we've harped on it all year, but the 0-0 mentality is exactly how you get to that. It's exactly what they're going to need moving forward. Also to recognize that, as Kobe Bryant once said, job's not finished. And for the Thunder, that's certainly the case. They've got to go down to New Orleans and get two more. But OKC being able to digest the different things that New Orleans threw at them in game one and respond in game two and just execute with machine-like precision when New Orleans tried to throw a zone at them, when they tried to go small, right. all of those different things. The Thunder just had a quick, immediate response to all of them.
Every single guy was just really on point, especially in the second game. It didn't feel like OKC's offense wavered, didn't feel like it hit a lull at any point. It helps when the shots are falling. And a lot of the shots that they got in game two were similar shots to what they got in game one. Those shots just did not go through the rim. It wasn't their night. As we mentioned all the time, something that Coach Dagnall brings up all the time, shooting, one of the most variant things in basketball. And so they're generating quality looks. They put themselves in a position to knock down those shots, and those shots started to fall big time in game two. As a matter of fact, they hit 14 threes. They shot 48% from the three-point line in this game. Five players in double figures, all five starters, three players with 20 or more points. That was Chet, J-Dub, and Shai.
And Chet really got it all started. And he, in this matchup with Valanciunas, is such an interesting fulcrum point because the Thunder plays this modern style of basketball. Yeah. In the first 5 minutes of game two, and for portions of game one, New Orleans really, even Willie Green, the head coach, said it before the game last night. He felt like, you know, it was late 90s, early 2000s basketball. Yeah. And the Pelicans, especially without Zion Williamson, they've got to do what they have to do with their personnel. But the Thunder is not going to get caught up playing late 90s, early 2000s basketball. They're going to play their style. And to see Chet go 5 for 5 and hit 15 points in the first quarter of game two was all the sign that you needed that the Thunder was going to be able to win that matchup there and be able to play its way. And, you know, Valanciunas was able to score some points early in that game down around the rim, but that's not sustainable offense for 48 minutes.
Right.
What the Thunder was putting out on the floor is.
Yeah, and Valanciunas, we should mention, got out to a really hot start in game two, just like a quick flurry of like, he had the first 11 points for New Orleans, but OKC so poised, so under control, recognizing that, yeah, he's not going to score 100 points for the Pelicans tonight, so we're going to be okay, just control ourselves and do what we can, what we do best, and that's defend the basketball and make sure that we're moving the ball. And the Pelicans, they were really forced to try different things defensively, like you mentioned. Yeah. They went to a zone. It was like a 2-3 zone. But then when the ball went into the high post, they switched to man-to-man.
Yeah.
And so like they tried to throw a lot of different tactical looks at the Thunder. And how OKC kind of flipped the switch on them, they put Shai in the middle. Mm-hmm. Like, all right, you want to go man-to-man when the ball gets to the high post? All right, we're going to put our best one-on-one player at the high post. And let me tell you, Shai basically just had his way at that high post area.
Career high in the playoffs, 33 points for Shai. So efficient. And, you know, for any consternation that there might have been after game one where he was not as efficient, oh, by the way, still hit the go-ahead shot in the closing minutes and had five crucial points and got to 28 points. But it was more of a labor for him in game one. This was easy in game two, and he's not going to take that for granted moving forward. But this is what we got used to seeing all season long in terms of, oh, like Shai hit 30 again.
Yeah.
Just playing totally within the flow, not forcing a thing, not having it be, you know, his tires turning in the mud, so to speak. And that was a product of all the Thunder players really coalescing together, all five starters in double figures, being able to execute out there on the floor.
Another guy I want to talk about, Jalen Williams, J-Dub, who also finished with 21 points in this game. And it was like typical J-Dub scoring, getting to the mid-range, knocking down those mid-range jumpers from the left side of the floor. But I want to talk about his facilitating because that was massive in this game. Some of the passes he was making, and one specifically that pops into my brain, I believe it was in the first half. He went off a screen on one side of the floor, got doubled, and zipped the ball cross court to Lu Dort.
Yep.
Mind you, Chet Holmgren's at the top of the key. Could have made an easy one more pass, but he saw that Jonas Valanciunas went up to cover Chet Holmgren. And so he skipped the ball all the way across the floor to Lu Dort, where a man had to close out. I forget who it was for New Orleans, but had to close out super hard on Lu. Too little, too late. Lu knocks down the three. And in my head, I'm like, that is great Thunder basketball. And J-Dub with some great basketball IQ right there.
Did you hear J-Dub postgame?
No, I missed it.
Room? Well, I told him, you know, J-Dub, you really were a great playmaker tonight, really helped fuel the offense. And he was like, oh, did I have a lot of assists? I was like, yeah, you had seven.
It's seven of them, dude.
and so he, I think another great indicator of like, he's just playing. And these guys are all just playing. They're not...
Yeah.
thinking about, you know, what the stat sheet says. They're not thinking about how many shots they got up. They're not thinking about, you know, if guys are hitting the shots that they passed to. I mean, it's just none of that matters. They're just playing the game. And he is such a great release valve, pressure release valve for Shea, because when New Orleans doubles, when they try to trap, when they try to bring extra help to Shea, the ball always ends up, you know, seemingly to find J-Dub to make that 4-on-3 play on the backside, or 3-on-2 play on the backside. And he just continued to make those to perfection. We saw the really beautiful one on the play to Aaron Wiggins. J-Dub drives baseline after some nice movement out top. Wiggins scores and forces a New Orleans timeout. And that really, that bucket really made you feel like the route was on.
And then how about Aaron Wiggins in this game, since we're bringing him up? I mean, 6 points, a perfect 2-for-2 from the field, 2-for-2 from free throw line. But it was just like always in the right spot, Aaron Wiggins in this game, you know, just in the right spot. He had 2 assists. He also had 5 rebounds in this game, just all over the floor. I remember the pass he had to Josh Giddey on one of those like backdoor cuts. And I was like, okay, Aaron Wiggins making the cuts, but also making the pass to the cuts.
Aaron Wiggins has not missed in the playoffs yet so far.
Unsurprising.
perfect 4-for-4 already and with 12 points. And he just, I mean, it reminds me of the start to his career when he did not miss inside of the 3-point line
I'll never
like
forget it.
6 weeks.
Yeah, exactly.
Just it continued excellent job by the role players. Isaiah Joe, 2-for-2 from behind the arc in this game. And, you know, just really great balance in terms of, as we talked about, I mean, guys have been out there not even taking shots. Like Gordon Hayward has taken 1 shot in the series.
Yeah.
His defense has been sensational. His rebounding, his presence, even though he has not played extended minutes.
Right.
He has totally fit what the Thunder is needed in that second unit. And it's a demonstration that, you know, New Orleans right now is searching. They would love to be able to play more than 8 guys right now. And the Thunder has a luxury of having 11 guys that they can go to that are legitimate playoff players.
Exactly.
And it's great that the Thunder has been able to run out as many different combinations and lineups as it has, while many other teams in the NBA would certainly be hoping that they could keep guys fresh, that they could have more options to go to.
Yeah.
Eventually in these series, you are either going to guys who haven't played yet and, you know, have sat there cold for the last week, or you've run out of counters and run out of options, and you just don't want to be in those situations. It's one of the reasons why Mark Daigneault and the Thunder organization has really taken this approach for years that, hey, we are going to invest in the depth of the group. And it happens that the Thunder has that quality depth.
And you could go outside of the starting five, you could go to any single guy. Jay Will, massive minutes in terms of his physicality and his ability to stretch the floor, knock down threes. Cason Wallace, his defense on CJ McCollum in game one at the buzzer, massive. Aaron Wiggins, we just mentioned. Isaiah Joe, Kenrich Williams, the Thunder's ability to go small. He's the key to that.
Yep.
And so the Thunder has all of these different options and guys who are absolutely ready whenever their number is called to step into these sort of crunch time minutes, these playoff minutes, and play in character like they have been playing all season long. A really big testament to this Thunder group and why they've been able to be so successful. Let's switch to the defensive end.
Yeah.
Because this has also been a massive key for how OKC has been able to maintain consistency and success over these first two games. 92 points on average allowed by the New Orleans, by the Thunder. The New Orleans Pelicans only scoring 92 points in each of these games. And it's the points off turnovers that stick out to me, Gallo, because in game two, the Thunder had 22 points off turnovers. In game one, they had 14 points off turnovers, and they also had 20 fast break points. So all of those things working together, what were you seeing on the defensive end by OKC?
That's how the Thunder wants to play. They want to get out and run. They want to get ahead of the length of New Orleans defense. And so to be able to turn their own defense into offense is absolutely critical. It all starts at the point of attack. Yeah. And what we've seen so far is Lu Dort has just absolutely put Brandon Ingram in
the Dortcher chamber.
The Dortcher chamber. The way that Lu moves his feet, the way that Lu keeps his arms out and just has presence to keep himself between Brandon Ingram and the basket and to just force Ingram to shoot over the top of him has made this such a difficult series for New Orleans, because that is efficient offense that they can usually count on from Ingram. Those post-ups, playing in pick and roll, being able to pull up for those mid-range jumpers. Ingram is one of those guys that can bend the statistics on that because of how prolific he is shooting in the mid-range. Dort's presence in terms of his footwork, his technique, his ability to bust around screens, all of that has really prevented Ingram from getting much going. And then the other aspect of that is the offensive fouls that the Thunder's been able to draw.
Yep.
By being in correct position, by having great footwork, the Thunder was able to draw 8 offensive fouls in game 2.
Yep.
And so you've got kind of a main engine really stalled. Even worse, some of these offensive possessions are just straight up turnovers. The Pelicans can't even get a shot on goal. And then you've got length with J-Dub on CJ McCollum.
That's what goes through my head is the Thunder has so many options in terms of point of attack defenders. Obviously, Lu Dort is the head of the snake. That's always the go-to kind of ace up your sleeve in terms of putting him on the opposing team's best player. Then you've got Jalen Williams and his 7'2 wingspan. Mm-hmm. Let's just put him in a passing lane somewhere. Let's just see what happens. And then off the bench, hey, Kaysen, come on in. Come sub in for Lu Dort. And in my head, if I'm Willie Green, I'm like, okay, what am I supposed to do here? There's an unrelenting stream of incredible point of attack defenders by the Thunder that they keep putting on my great perimeter players. My options are running low.
Yeah, and that's why on the flip side, the Thunder's leaning into having as many offensive creators as possible on the floor is critical because there's just too many good defenders in this league that can really blow up your offense if you only have one or two creators out there on the floor. The Thunder is able to boast having Lu Dort, J-Dub, Shea, Chet obviously is a different type of defender. Mm-hmm. He's got 7 blocks in 2 games so far. And then Kaysen Wallace, Kenrich Williams, Aaron Wiggins off the bench. All of those guys have shown an ability to keep a man in front of them with their footwork, with their strength and positioning. And so the Thunder being able to do that has really forced a lot of isolation out of New Orleans and really limited driving kicks and good looks. They got some threes in game 1 from Trey Murphy, in game 2 from Herb Jones, but not enough to sustain any sort of offense for the long term.
Well, you mentioned Chet. I do want to talk about him for a little bit because he had 5 blocks in game 1, which was the most by a Thunder player in their playoff debut. And then in game 2, another couple of blocks in that game as well. The rim protection is just, it's something that we've seen really all season long. So it's not new, but in these moments, obviously in the playoffs, just a massive difference maker around the rim.
What was your perspective of Chet's block at the end of game 1?
Larry Nance.
On Larry Nance, because you're right there, right in front of it.
I thought, I was like, I was with J-Dub on this. I heard him post game because he was like, kind of like, that could have been potentially on the borderline of a goaltend. Uh-huh. I was like, how did he get to that before it started its downward trajectory? Because he got it literally right at the top.
Yep.
And Larry Nance floated that thing up there. Like, he was trying to hit the rafters with that floater, knowing that Chet was right there. And I don't know how Chet got the ball. And it came as a surprise to me when the ball started going in the other direction.
Chet's got to be, if not the best, one of the very best at defending a 2-on-1 situation. And that's exactly what it was there in that play. Nance rolled to the rim. Chet is having to defend a potential drop-off pass to the dunker spot and deal with a potential floater from Nance. You know, Chet stays on the ground long enough, has that long wingspan to deny that pass to the dunker spot. And then as the second jumper was able to get up off the floor higher than Nance, faster than Nance, and longer than Nance to block that shot. I mean, just truly incredible stuff.
Yeah.
I know our guy Matt Bishop, he was all over this from the Gonzaga days.
That's right.
So we're really happy to see this coming to fruition here in OKC.
And the fact that he has such great discipline as a rookie, as a 7-footer who has this ability to jump, and he could block any shot out there. But is it the right move? Is it better to just go out, contest, and box out? He has a really good kind of decision-making process when it comes to those sort of things. So he's not always racking up fouls all the time. He doesn't always get into foul trouble. He's just kind of making the right decision and leading to some really quality block shots out there on the floor.
And leading to continued runouts for OKC to be able to turn those stops into good offense. And we know that, Paris, this is not going to just be sunshine and rainbows for the next couple games or more in this series. this series is going back to New Orleans. Mm-hmm. Role players tend to play better at home. Mm-hmm. We've seen some really great play from the Thunder's role players. New Orleans is going to get that boost back in Smoothie King Center. So
yeah.
OKC is going to have to be even better. That was the message coming out of post-game media availability last night. Mark Daigneault said, we know that New Orleans is going to be better in game three than they were in game two.
Yeah.
And we know that we have to be better to have a chance to win down there.
That is why this 0-0 mentality, which we have probably said a billion times over the course of this season, this is where it becomes even more important and why the Thunder practices that mindset over the course of a season. Because in this series, every game takes on a brand new life. As you know, someone who has experienced these playoffs so, so often, being able to get back 0-0, something that Nick Collison said in the past with Royce Young, happy teams get beat.
Yep.
And so being able to get back centered, get back to your identity and have a kind of a fresh perspective going into your next game, very important for the Thunder. So let's give you what's coming up for this Thunder team. We're heading to New Orleans. We're going to be there for a minute. Two games in New Orleans. Game three going to be on Saturday at 2:30 p.m. Our coverage on Bally Sports Oklahoma begins at 2, so be sure to mark your calendars for that. A little bit of an earlier tip-off on Saturday. And then game four, Monday, timing still to be determined on that. But be sure to tune in. Bally Sports Oklahoma, we've got you covered. And at OKC Thunder, social channels for all the timing and game information.
Really looking forward to it. I just can't wait to see whether we got some Thunder fans down in New Orleans waiting for us, and to see how this team comports itself on the road. You know, they got the home playoff game experience under their belt. This is a different challenge. And as Mark Daigneault says, these guys, they continue to clear hurdles. Well, there's another hurdle coming up in front of them here in game three.
What's interesting, Gallo, is you'll remember the last season, the Thunder played a play-in game in New Orleans, and the atmosphere in that building then was pretty raucous.
Yeah.
I mean, and obviously, like, as to be expected, it was, you know, early in the playoff or play-in years, and it was pretty loud in there, and I can expect it to be even louder. But even then, that was like the loudest I'd heard an arena up to that point, just in the play-in game.
Right. Yeah. So it's going to be a great environment. These are wonderful tests for the Thunder, and it's all of that nonverbal communication that is required that this team has built up, and we see the value in continuity in situations like this where guys can play off each other. They understand each other. They understand what the team wants to get to. And as we saw in game two, when things get thrown at you that are a little bit different, the ability to recognize, immediately make decisions and make collective decisions where everybody understands, hey, this is the action that they're putting out at us. We've got to go react to it, and being on the same page with that. That is all so valuable this time of year.
That critical thinking, that adaptability, showing up big time in the playoffs, and obviously has allowed some early success here for the Thunder in this playoff series against the New Orleans Pelicans. That wraps us up here on the Thunder Basketball Universe podcast today. Thank you so much for tuning in. By the way, if you're traveling to New Orleans, we got some dogs heading down to the bayou. Bark at us. Let us know in the comments. And let us know if you see us at Smoothie King Center. We'll come by and say hello to you. Until then, thank you so much for watching and listening. Be sure to like, rate, and subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Thank you so much to our producer, Matt Bishop. And until next time, Thunder up and catch you later.